Hello and welcome to the Harrogate Podcast with me, Andrew Gray. In the Harrogate Podcast, it's my job to deconstruct and interview the movers and shakers in this Harrogate market, this Harrogate bubble that we all live in. And I'm delighted that this afternoon I have Emma Easton. Good afternoon, Emma.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Really well, thank you.
Super. Thank you for sitting in this chair and being interrogated by me for the next half an hour or an hour. Because we don't know each other that well, I think you should give me and our listeners your elevator pitch.
Yeah, over to you. So, Strand Recruitment, we are a specialist recruitment firm. We specialise in key areas such as IT, HR, accountancy, telecoms, sales and marketing. And what we do is basically take the pain out of recruitment for our clients by providing them a cherry-picked shortlist of the best talent that's available on the market.
Forgive this question, Emma, but are all recruiters, you know what I'm going to say, are you all scumbags? That's what some people think.
I don't think that you are. I've been in recruitment now for nearly 17 years, and some of my best relationships with clients and some of the best clients that we have start off with the exact same question. Are you the recruitment shark that I anticipate you will be? And I love that because their expectation is super low. So it's really easy for me to reassure them and give them some proven data that we're not the shark, and actually you can't stay in business and have the reputation that we have if you don't do a really good job, because reputation is everything in recruitment.
We have a similar problem as lawyers. People think very low of us.
But clients, as soon as you do a good job for them and you provide them with the talent that they need to make their business unique, they soon see the value in what you do for them. It's not just about providing a shortlist of candidates, it's about the client, the market knowledge that you can give them, the salary information, what their competitors are potentially offering, what they need to change as spec, what they maybe need to do to adjust their culture if they've got some problems within the business and retention is an issue for them. There's loads of things that we can do to add value, and you only know that and you're only able to add the value if you've been in recruitment and you appreciate and you know your market inside and out. As soon as clients listen to us and they see the value very, very quickly, and that conversation's parked.
I got it. Now, you were schooled in Harrogate, I believe.
Yep.
Which school did you go to?
So actually, we moved from Newcastle to Harrogate when I was 7. We went to Ripley. Believe it or not, Ripley has a little school. Yeah, we moved to South Stainley, which is in between Ripon and Harrogate, but actually went to a little primary school in Ripley, and then moved on to Panel, which is now, has got the big BMW garage, and then I moved to Rossett High from there.
And say 10 or however many years working for other recruiters, was it?
Yeah, so one recruiter.
So
I did medical. I knew I wanted to get into recruitment, actually, because my high school teacher, Mrs. Pratt, said to me, "You need to get into recruitment," when I was doing sixth form. And I took that. That resonated with me. I took it as the clear advice
that
I needed to do that.
Why did Mrs. Pratt think that?
I'm not sure. I was doing business studies at the time and always scored really, really highly. And I suppose recruitment is a sales role, essentially. People think it's, you know, very nice and finding candidates really lovely roles, and we're sometimes mistaken as the job centre. We are not. It's commercial business, it's a sales role. A consultant is a good salesperson, but they need to have the added extras on top of that, and that's what makes a really good recruitment consultant. So I think in me, Mrs. Pratt saw something, and then off I went. I got a sales role for 2 months, so because I needed some sort of experience. So I got a telemarketing role for a couple of months, applied for my first role in recruitment, which was medical recruitment, and got the job straight away, and then spent 4 or 5 years there, then went on to Reed accountancy and spent 10 years there. Reid supplied me with superb training, a really good training manual. You're in training for 5 years with Reid. So that was fab. And then after the birth of my second child, so I'd had 14 months on maternity, I knew, even though I love my colleagues and they loved me, they would have taken all my clients. So I was going to go back after 14 months on zero and have to build up a client base. And decided at 30, it's now or never. I knew I wanted to own my own business and take the best bits of my experience and tailor them to a really great package for clients moving forward. So that's what I did.
Got it. Have you ever gone back to see Mrs. Pratt and say,
no, you gave her my career? No, unfortunately. I actually did go back to Rossett just recently, as it was last summer actually, in 2017, just purely because they were doing an employer's kind of kind of a careers day for the sixth form kids. So that was really great, kind of trip down memory lane, and saw some of my old teachers, which was lovely. But actually, yeah, things move on, and it was, yeah, really lovely, but yeah, I've not seen her.
I'll be playing football at Rossett in about 3 hours' time, actually. It's a very small world. Yeah, so over the years, you must have placed hundreds of candidates in their jobs. How many have you even worked it out? How many, do you think?
I haven't, no. I only specialised in accountancy. That was my market. That was that was the area that I was trained in. So for no other reason, but that was the speciality that I was given. So that in itself is quite a niche area. It's not just a case of to interview an accountant is a lot harder, and there's a lot more detail that you need to kind of drill down into than another kind of more generic role. So that's the value. But actually, in terms of candidates that we've placed, because now we've got consultants that specialise in different areas, it's really hard to keep track of all the placements. But there's been some exciting times about. I suppose it would maybe give away my age if I told them how many I've placed, but yeah, it'll be in the triple figures, definitely. But but I'm proud to say now we will only place caliber candidates. It's not just a case of I don't have to deal with everybody now. I only deal with the people that I actually want to place. So
got it. And so you set Strand up after the birth of your second,
George,
and that was 5.5 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, so coming up to 6 years.
And your business has flown. Wow, what do you put your success down to?
So a few things, really. It's 90% is blood, sweat and tears. It's hard work and it's work ethic. And luckily, I have got a really good work ethic, but I don't see it as... I am one of those fortunate people that I do get up and I've got a spring in my step and I'm ready to go. And I'm really motivated towards my role. I'm passionate about what we do. It's a lovely position to be in, to help somebody secure a really great candidate that we know is going to add value to their business, and we know we're going to get that repeat business. Because even though some clients will come to us and they've got a role that they need to fill, but actually we can't guarantee that we will find them that candidate, because when we don't manufacture, so we can't manufacture a tin of beans and say, yeah, there you go, Andrew, there's 10 candidates for you, brilliant. We've only got access to the people that are actually available in the area at that particular time and looking for a role. But we actually have a really high fill rate. So 96-97%, we always fluctuate between those two, is our fill rate in terms of our conversion.
I almost don't believe that. Yeah. That sounds extraordinarily high.
There's a lot of...
I was going to guess 20% if you were to ask me at the start of this.
No. We're really in a fortunate position where we don't have to take on every client, every vacancy. I'm more than happy to say no to a piece if we can't add value to it. So recently, about a year or so ago, we launched our IT division. Well, up until that point, I would turn away clients that would need our IT services because we can't add the value. We don't have the expertise. And we've lost contracts because of it. Some of our clients that we used to work with, where we'd place finance people, would say, well, you're cherry picking the finance vacancies. I need someone to fill these IT roles. And it's hard to explain, but if we can't add the value, we won't kind of throw our hat in the ring for that kind of opportunity. So we're really fortunate where we can walk away from a deal if it's not right. We're commercial people, and I encourage all my consultants to be very commercial.
And how many consultants do you have?
So we have 6 consultants.
Impressive.
At the moment. Yeah.
Okay, and your office is it somewhere in Leeds, I assume, from there?
Yeah, so we've got an office in Leeds and London. So we have, we're actually based at Carwood Park, which is on Selby Road, and it's actually converted, it used to be a working farm, and now they're converted into luxury office space, and really lovely space to work in.
And the clients you tend to work with, are they national, or are they just sort of Harrogate, Leeds,
national,
and London as well?
Absolutely. They're based national. There are some of our clients that actually have a presence international, but we don't support them on those pieces. So we're really proud to say WSP Parsons Brinckhoff is one of our clients. They were responsible for the Shard, engineering on the Shard in London. They turn over $8 billion a year. Then we've got kind of smaller clients that, so ones that are familiar would probably be Pound World, so we'll support their head office functions, and then but we'll work with the beauty of what we do is it's exciting for every single company. There's slightly different remits. So one person in Parsons Brinckhoff, they've got a recruitment team, but they rely on us as a resource to kind of cushion their numbers, if you like, and supply the talent that they need, and ensure they get a really good caption of the market. And they have a process, and we're literally just sending, you know, the best candidates, if you like. Then you may have someone that's recruiting their very first person, and you and I both know how important
Absolutely.
That is. So equally, they're very important pieces of recruitment, very, very different process. And the person that's maybe their first recruit, they may need a lot more support in terms of on a consultancy basis.
What tips would you give them to, anyways, a new business, newish business, hiring that first member of staff?
The first thing is I would go through what value the role is going to add to them, what they see as the objectives that this person will achieve. Also, what potentially that candidate will get from the role. It is a two-way street. It's a candidate-led market at the moment. So to attract the best talent, what are you going to do to retain that talent? What succession plans have you got in place? If it is very much, this is the role profile, there's nowhere else to go from there. Okay, so have you looked at your costings? You know, it can be the basics, really. Look at the costings. Look at, you know, what you would do if this person wasn't in the business, what the detriment would be to the business. What is the value that they would add, similarly? And see, well, you know, okay, so I'm thinking admin, they can do the admin side. Okay, so how much admin is there really? Some people will pluck kind of roles from different areas of the business and say, that's the type of person I want. But actually, an admin person doesn't necessarily want to do the sales aspect of a role or generate any business development. So we're giving them an education all the time and hand-holding them through a process. Have you thought about the interview process? What you want to gain out of the first stage? If you're going to do a second stage, what would be the difference between the first and the second, and what could the candidate prepare, and what would be good to kind of get out of them in terms of competency-based questions? So loads of things that they would consider. But if anyone does want any specific hints and tips, they could always go to our website, which will be available at the end of the pod.
Got it. Of all the people that have sat on that chair and been interviewed by me, you seem to have the most energy, and that's not to criticise anyone else who also sat there, but goodness, you speak quickly with passion.
Sorry, I do speak.
No, it's not a criticism in any way. I mean, you strike me as someone who wakes up at sort of 4 o'clock in the morning, goes for a run, and then sends 1,000 emails before 6:30. But what is your routine in the morning?
So I'm very much, I have got a routine. I'm a plan girl, so I have to stick to that routine for everything to happen during the day. So yeah, if you know, the alarm is typically set, if you checked my phone, it's anywhere between 6 o'clock in the morning most days, and there's a couple of 4:30s in there as well. But
what are the 4:30s about?
So I attend a referral-based meeting, which starts at 6:30 and finishes at around 8:30. So business hours are not affected, if you like, but that's more working on the business than typically in the business.
Got it. I mean, do you add any exercise into that? I mean, how do
yeah,
you
so kick? I so, play netball 3 times a week. Yeah.
So okay, didn't know.
But not in the morning. Yeah.
Okay. And so are you capable? I mean, are you just, is it, how high level a netballer player are you?
So I'm in a league, but yeah, there's the odd player of the match, which I'm really proud of at my age to get to get that on a regular basis is really good news.
Which is your team?
It's actually called the Gems, Midget Gems. Yeah, it's all because we're all probably below 5. I think I'm one of the tallest at 5'5", so yeah. But it's not all about height or size.
And you're playing against women of normal height.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's fine. At centre or wing defence, you don't need height. You'll be fine.
Got it. Changing tack somewhat. Mm. When I say to you, who's the most successful person you could think of?
Mm.
Who comes to mind?
There's a couple of people, but actually, and yeah, I'm gonna go with Oprah, because she is somebody who has been through an awful lot when I've researched, and achieved probably the highest standards of her career in terms of success, and in different areas. She's awesome at so many different kind of aspects of her career, and it's proven that's a real talent. That's a talent.
And
right,
so I know who Oprah Winfrey is, of course, and I'm aware of obviously her success and fame and fortune. But you know, what particular areas do you think that, you know, she's done well in that perhaps, you know, you are following, or
yeah, I think in terms of you wouldn't necessarily think that a chat show host could transform into a movie star, but she's incredibly talented when it comes to that, and also knows an awful lot about business, and she's turned herself into a corporation in herself, and she ought to be proud of that, and I'm sure she is. And then also she's involved in politics, so it shows that there's a real mind behind there, a brain that's constantly working and really impressive.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So when you've changed tact again, you've broken into the London market. Mm. That's gutsy. Now, why go for something that is so difficult to do?
We're not finding it difficult, actually, which is, I think, because London is such a big area for us to tackle. I've taken my time in terms of this. This is something that's always been on the map in terms of the business plan for a number of years, but actually I've only been kind of the wheels in motion and somebody appointed to handle that in November of last year. And that's purely because you need the right person that's leading that side. But I definitely feel that London is somewhere we can literally emulate our success in Yorkshire and the best things that we do in for our Yorkshire clients and anywhere up in the north, and add that value in the south. Actually, a lot of our clients are saying, they're not price conscious, which is a big tick for us. They're more on the service. What service can you add? And what value are you adding to the process? Are you taking the time? We will not just plaster CVs and hope that one sticks. It's not what we're about. And that any agency that does that, that's a really risky tactic, because actually you're effectively downloading a database for a client to sift through and do your role. A really good agency with strong consultants will supply them with a cherry-picked list of candidates that they know add value, fit the profile, and sometimes go what we call a wild card. And we'll always try and throw in a wild card if they're available, because it maybe gives the client something to think on. Actually, I didn't think about that, but now you've mentioned it, now that skill is available, I feel, yeah. And you would only necessarily know that if you've spent that time with that client and you understand the gap in their team and the value that this position will hopefully add. And then you can add that extra gold, if you like, the gold dust from a recruitment perspective, and say, I know you want them to do this from an IT perspective, but actually we can get someone that can do that and potentially give you a future-proof succession plan because this person's also got this. And that is where we really add that value from a client perspective.
Of all the people that sat in that chair, you are, boy, you've got to be the most commercial person in there. And that, again, is not a criticism. You come across somewhat a bit like a business coach in a way. You talk about business like it's such second nature from you. You did the business studies, A level, your teacher picked it up then. You've obviously done very well before you set up your own business, and your business is flowing. I mean, do you have a business coach yourself, and do you coach others?
No, I don't. I don't coach others. I've got friends that have got businesses, and they've approached me to see, and that is flattering. I will say I'm very good at what I do, and yeah, I suppose I am commercially aware. I'm commercially astute. I know what makes good business sense, but I'm not. That doesn't apply to every business. I'm very good at recruitment, and so yeah, I can add value from that perspective, but that doesn't necessarily transfer into all businesses. But thank you.
So Emma, you used to place to say so many people over the years. You say pay baby treble figures. Is there a particular placement that you've worked on that is the most memorable?
Yeah, so I suppose there's a few. When I first started Strand, one of the first clients that I won as a contract was actually Poundworld. Now I can say this now because they know now, but I never went in there and pitched as myself. Yeah, I'll supply the finance team. Don't worry about this and agree terms. I've got people. You know, use the royal we if you like. Now, actually, I just didn't take holidays for 18 months. So the first 18 months were really hard work. I had to be responsive all the time and be available. But, you know, the best placements were part of that. You know, I was really proud of what I was doing for their team and the value that I was adding to their process and to the candidates. You know, placing people where I knew they were going to have a really great future. It's probably, yeah, those back in those
That's
days.
A pretty big client to get.
Yeah,
in the first
it was. Months. Yeah, it was brilliant. But in business, you know, the first. I remember the first year was big. You know, big highs and lows. It would literally take nothing, and you'd be on the roof. Yay, I can't believe that. And then you'd be on the floor. You know, the next minute. But someone said, actually, the first 3 years are going to be like that. And I was like, 3 years. I don't know if I can cope with that. But the way that you change and evolve, and if you believe in yourself and the service that you can provide, then hold your own. And the biggest tip that I would say to people is don't go in there and think it's all about how cheap you can do something for someone. Because when I've done studies of my clients and why they pick agencies to work with, the price is the last thing that they will consider. It's the expertise, it's the value, it's, you know, the knowledge that you bring, and then the price is something obviously any good contract will include, but it's not the deal breaker.
What would your rivals say about you? You know, your arch enemies, if you have any.
Maybe
what would they say?
They would probably say that I'm a fair person. I'd hope that they'd say I'm a fair person. I'll absolutely hold my own in a negotiation, but that, you know, I've got a right to be there, and we've earned our stripes over the years to represent the candidates that we do. So yeah, we do break down PSLs, but we do that because we know we can provide the calibre and the thread. And any business, the only thing that stands you aside from your competition are the people that work within your business, and that's true of Strand as well. So yes, I would say that they would probably say, she holds her own, but she's fair when it comes to it.
I bet they do. Now, longest day, you know, is your longest day at 9 till 5? I'm guessing not.
Back in the day, and I always refer to these, I would be up and out of the door 5, maybe 6 o'clock.
Goodness, okay.
And then I could be back at 10:30, so 10:30 leaving the office. That, and sometimes that still happens if it's, yeah, so. But you don't appreciate the time. You appreciate what you're doing during the day, but you don't clock watch. If you are in a business where you're clock watching, it's maybe not the right business for you.
That is amazing advice. I couldn't agree more. I don't clock watch since I've set up. I don't have that Sunday night pang in the stomach of going to work tomorrow for someone else I don't like. I'm going to do the thing that I like
doing. Absolutely. And if you do, it comes across in your clients. They can see how passionate you are about what you do.
Yeah. when you came in here today, we offered you lots of drinks, you know, teas, coffee as usual, and you went with water.
Yeah.
How do you sustain, you know, all that energy? Are you a Red Bull junkie, coffee junkie?
Or? Oh, no, I don't agree with those drinks. No, I think energy breeds energy. So the more you do, the more energy you gain. I know that that doesn't resonate with everybody, but I genuinely believe in that. So, you know, the pace that I work at, but also the activities that I do. I'm not somebody that will sit and watch TV. So if you ask me what was going on in the soaps, I couldn't tell you. But I will, you know, I've always find other things better to do. Unfortunately, maybe that's an age thing. Because back at, you know, in my teens and certainly 20s, I would absolutely be tuned into the soaps, but then realise there's a bigger world out there. So, but yeah, I love energy, definitely breeds energy. So what I would say is if you start your day the way you want it to work out, it genuinely, more often than not, does. That's my only thing that I would work on.
So you almost micromanage your own day from the day before. You have a to-do list, is that how
I always have a to-do list, because then there's nothing better than crossing off the things to do, and I always write on the list things to do, but there's nothing better than crossing off what you've achieved. And some of that, you know, you need flexibility, because when you're running your own business, there's always going to be a curveball, there's always going to be something that happens, and equally so if you've got a family, there's always going to be something that happens in that. But if you can, you know, if you can manage your day as closely as you can and make sure you achieve something, and yeah, my kids will always say, well, what value have you added today? And that's because they've heard me say it so many times, bless them. But you know, that's fine, they get it. And if you are adding value to a day, then what better way of kind of giving yourself a pat on the back and ticking that box?
Got it. So 5.5 years ago, Strand did not exist.
Mm.
So if we were to fast forward from, you know, another 5.5 years from today, where would you be?
Do you know, I never really wanted the business to grow. I know that sounds odd, but I actually did it for family life, work-life balance. That doesn't happen when you start your own business. So if anyone's listening, they're thinking that, don't do it. But your business never flatlines. You're either going up or down. So you've got to choose which way you're going to go. And when you get a flavour and a taste for it and a drive and that passion, that motivation kicks in, you can't stop. So in terms of where I want to be, I never really thought I'd be on with six consultants. So I think in the next... Was it 5 years or 10 years?
I said, gave you 5.5, but hey.
Oh, okay, being generous then. So I would definitely say the pace that we're growing at the moment, I would love it to be, you know, kind of, I never want to put numbers on it, but I'd love us to emulate what we're doing in the north within the London market, and there's definitely scope for that. So I would see us adding, you know, or doubling the team as a minimum in that time, and there's definitely that potential. We've got so many exciting plans and so many things that we want to focus on, and we can do that. I suppose the only risk, I suppose, or critical success factor I've got to be concerned about is I can only grow if there's talent out there that buys into, that I buy into, if you like, and they buy into, we buy into each other. So that's based on consultants, and we're really fortunate. The team that we've got is spot on. I couldn't be prouder of them. So
can I ask you about LinkedIn?
Yes.
So most professionals use it. It must be an absolute gift for anyone who works in recruitment. I think there's a recruitment side to LinkedIn, is that correct?
Yeah.
Is a lot of your work LinkedIn related, or is there just so much more to it?
There's a lot more science behind it. Okay. So when it comes to LinkedIn, we've got consultants that have the premium accounts. So yeah, they can contact an email, in mail candidates. And that's a really great talent for some, or sorry, talent pool for some of our consultants and some of our specialisms. For others, not so much. So a lot of our profit goes into the investment of the job boards. Now, you know, we can compete with the likes of, you know, the really big agencies, the ones that, you know, for example, the one that I worked for, Reed Accountancy, they spend millions on marketing. They will post thousands and thousands of jobs that they are recruiting for, because they employ so many consultants and they will search for candidates for so many different employers. The science behind it from our perspective is we will let them do all that posting. But if you went along and you applied for a position with another agency, that actual application goes into the same pool of candidates that we get access to, and we cherry pick from that pool of candidates. So we only deal with candidates that we want to deal with, as opposed to applications that we don't.
Got it. Understood. Changing tack. Are there any particular business books, recruitment books, non-fiction, fiction books that, you know, have a real synergy with you? And then it comes to mind, I read The E-Myth, and, you know, that is...
Do you know the one thing that, maybe not expected, but actually The Secret, I don't know if you've read it, by Rhonda Byrne. Actually, it's about believing and visualising and having those... I'm a goal person, I'm a target person. The one thing that I miss about not being an employee anymore is those targets. The target side, okay, and somebody holding me accountable to that. So actually, I do have business peers that now hold me accountable to the targets that I've set. If I don't hit a target 1 month, who's going to, you know, right, fine, you've not hit that target. Whereas now, I'm because I'm so goal orientated and target orientated, I need that to keep striving towards and always raise the bar constantly. So I'm constantly going towards something. And some people see that as a negative. If you ask my mum, she says, you know, you miss the people in the peripheral vision a little bit, Emma, when you're traveling through to get to that target. But that's just who I am. She loves me for who I am. So that's, I'm grateful for that. But actually, the secret is about, it can help people in different guys. So if you are struggling with something, it can help you visualize that goal or that opportunity or a situation improving. And I was never I'm not into kind of that side of things at all. But actually, a friend of mine, Abby Pick, recommended it to me, and it was a game changer. An absolute game changer. And at a time in my life where actually things were a little bit turbulent, so it really got me, you know, got my brain focusing again and that kind of clear drive.
I should load up. But you said in your answer that you have peers who...
Yeah.
Is that in a paid basis? Just explain to me how that works. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so I do also have a peer group where there's about six directors that get together on a monthly basis, and they're all running their own businesses, typically anywhere between 500,000 and 15 million in terms of turnover. And we all add, all from different sectors, so manufacturing, trades, just a different sector, but actually we add value from a different perspective for one another, and that's who keeps us accountable. You've got those clear objectives that you've pinned down, so.
Got it, that's very helpful. What sort of tech do you use? Either in terms of CRMs or on your phone, watches, whatever. What's the most useful sort of app or tech thing that you have?
So if you looked on my phone now, that's an interesting question. If you looked on my phone now, what would be the apps that I'd most use?
Yes.
It would be my emails, because I'm constantly refreshing. I couldn't be without that. And in terms of technology for the office, we actually heavily invest in a bespoke package specifically for recruitment, and does a lot of clever things that make the job a lot easier. Kind of as soon as you get an email, it filters straight into the CRM, and there's loads of things if you it tracks the terms, and especially as the business grows, it's hard to keep an eye on everything, but we have those kind of that one portal, that cloud, if you like, that keeps us all on track.
I thought you were going to say emails. I figured it was. Emma, it's been an absolute pleasure interviewing you. How do our listeners find out more about you?
Okay, so they could go to the website, which is strandrecruitment.com, or call our offices, which is Leeds 011-3360-7800, or call London on 0203-890-4544.
And I'm sure you're on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, absolutely, all over LinkedIn. So check, Emma Easton.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.